Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk about Tom's crazy Cairo adventure. How are you, Tom?
Pretty good. Yeah. I don't know how crazy a Cairo adventure it was, but...
You know, I was going for alliteration. I was going something alliterative. I was trying to think celestial because of, I don't know, maybe the pyramids had some celestial value, but I didn't go too crazy. I just went with a crazy Cairo trip. And to be honest with you, for some of our listeners, I think a long weekend, you left a Thursday, you're back on a Tuesday. For some, that would be a crazy trip, especially flying all the way via Doha to get there. Well, I mean, I've done
stranger, it. Well, it's stranger apparently to fly through LaGuardia. I think that seemed to be the more shocking thing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So to bring our listeners sort of up to speed, why don't you just talk a little bit about the trip at a high level, and then we'll kind of walk into things, because I want to totally dive into this LaGuardia thing, but just give the listeners a postage stamp weekend and what you actually did.
Well, in a nutshell, you know, this trip was partially your fault.
As many things are.
Well, you know, I joke because, you know, we both bought tickets to go to Cape Town a number of years ago. And this during the pandemic. And of course, this is just when I think one of the variants, was it the Delta variant or what? Which variant was it?
It was the dreaded Delta variant.
Yeah, I think the Delta variant was going like wildfire in South Africa. So we got nervous and we just canceled it. And literally maybe, what is that, two, almost 3 years later is when I finally flew this ticket on Qatar Airways that I paid, you know, good, some good money for. I think we found a really good Q Suites fare for in the, you know, the 2000 something dollar range, right? Which is pretty good deal, I think, for the amount of airtime and the quality of the, you know, airline and all that other stuff. But I just couldn't find a way to use this thing until, you know, finally I just ran out of time. And I was like, okay, let me find the cheapest business class, you know, Q Suites flight that I can find that would utilize all this voucher, essentially, that I've been holding on to for pretty much the maximum amount allowed. And best I could find was Montreal to Cairo. That was the best option. And I was really hoping for a schedule change, but never happened.
And all in all, I mean, I think you made out really well. And just for perspective for our listeners, we talked about my half of this voucher all the way back on episode 15. Wow. I mean, so you really, really stretched this. I mean,
I did.
Absolute kudos, my friend. That I thought was really incredible that, like, we were still talking about it. You brought it up a few weeks ago. You're like, oh, yeah, you remember I'm doing that trip. I'm finally using our South Africa credit. I'm like, that's still alive?
It's pretty crazy how long I extended that thing. And strangely, you know, lately, a lot of the travel I've been having, I've been just not really excited about it. I was not excited for this trip at all, strangely enough. And that was so wrong because I realized now having come back, it was a great trip. You know, I enjoyed myself tremendously and I do value the time and the expense, you know, that I paid for this. And I feel like what I got in return was really nice. It was worth it.
Total tangent. You've said that about a couple of trips now.
I know.
You just weren't excited. And in fact, we're talking about the same thing about an upcoming trip that we have.
Oh,
what
yes.
Do you think? Why do you think that is?
That's a great question. You know what I think it is I don't feel like sometimes that I'm, maybe it's like I'm not getting like the same thrill of maximizing or something, or I just feel like it could probably be one other thing. I will tell you part of the other problem is my leave balance, my PTO that I have is so low. I just think for some reason it puts some sort of like cloud over it about how, you know, having like zero vacation time left is, it's making me nervous.
I hear you. My theory was, because we didn't pre-coordinate this conversation, you just happened to mention that it just wasn't bringing you joy. You know, the excitement of a trip usually brings us more joy than the actual taking of the trip.
This was the opposite. This is not at all. I was not excited at all for the trips.
Yeah, yeah. And so here I'm thinking that the reason that you're not excited is because you don't think you're going to have enough time there. You're not going to have enough downtime to kind of rejuvenate, you know, really enjoy the trip. And now it sounds like you got there and you were on like adrenaline.
Yep. It is funny. You know, maybe you're right. It's just for some reason lately, it feels like the parameters or the things surrounding the trips that I've taken recently, I feel like they're not always ideal. And maybe that's why I don't get really excited about them. But then once you're on the trip and you're traveling, you're like, oh yeah, this is, I love this. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah. You're back in Air World. It's like your happy place.
It is my happy place. And you know, it's also, you go through these periods where for whatever reason, I'm not doing a lot of travel booking. And then suddenly you go into these periods where like, oh, let me book this flight. Let me book this hotel. Let me book this flight. And then suddenly you're in your happy place again.
Yeah. I'm in that place where I'm still trying to patch up a few trips. And it started out that I was going to be traveling every other weekend in April, right into mid-May.
That's aggressive.
Yeah. Well, and we were going to do the Eclipse and Nomas. Then I had to throw in a work trip in there. So, you know, I felt like I traded one domestic trip for another. And I've still got this Cairo trip, another Cairo trip. The Cairo trip that we... Cairo is the bane. The fun and the bane.
I wish they just had a better airport. Like, it would be so much nicer if Cairo was a nicer airport, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But the reality is you don't remember the old Cairo airport. This was my first time to Cairo.
I've never been to Cairo before. This
airport is luxurious compared to what it used to be. I'm just going to tell you.
Wow.
10 or 15 years ago,
Why do I feel this sounds very familiar? This is exactly what you said about Rio Airport. It was like the same. It's like, I feel like this is deja vu walking through Rio Airport. I'm like, wow, this used to be a lot. This is not nicer than it was 10 years ago.
That was Sao Paulo. Rio was just as nice or not nice as been, however you want to call it. Anyway, so back to your trip. You booked it out of Montreal. Yes. I think we've covered many a times on the pod that you can get cheaper flights into and out of Canada, which I think is really good. I'd love to table the discussion of whether or not it's worth the savings until the end, because I know that we had very strong feelings after our Rio trip in episode 17. But let's talk about your logic and your plans for repositioning from Washington, D.C. to Montreal.
Yeah, there's quite a few options. I mean, fortunately, you know, D.C. does have nonstops to Montreal, right? Actually, both from Dulles and from Reagan. So,
and of course, you took one of those because it's only like an hour flight and you actually want to get to Montreal so you can start.
No, that's not what I did. I did not do the logical thing. No, I flew through LaGuardia. One of our most, well, actually, I say in the past, I would have joked and said one of our most beautiful airports in the United States. Actually, LaGuardia is kind of one of the nicest airports in the United States now. Do you believe it?
I am astonished. I still haven't been there, believe it or not. I haven't been there since I lived there.
I think you will be shocked. You will be very shocked. The terminal that American flies out of now has been, for the most part, remodeled. I know that the Delta terminal is still in quite a bit of construction and is not quite there yet, but the part that is gorgeous. The lounge game at LaGuardia, I would dare say better than JFK in a way.
I mean, I don't know that that surprises a lot of us.
Well, and maybe that's not a huge standard to exceed. But, you know, you've got, you know, at least the terminal that American and Air Canada uses, you know, they've got the American Express Lounge and now the Chase Sapphire Lounge, dueling lounges right next to each other in the new terminal.
That's exciting. That also reminds me that we have to find an excuse to go check out the Chase Sapphire Lounge at Washington Dulles.
We do need to do that. That might have to happen in the near future.
We got to mark the date, man. We got to do it. So tell us briefly about this brand new Chase Sapphire Lounge.
I think it's very nice. I mean, I don't want to do, you know, I mean, obviously you just go on to the blogosphere or the YouTube sphere or whatever, the X sphere, I don't know, whichever sphere you want to go into. And I'm sure there's going to be some content creator that's going to talk to you about it. I think it's a very competent lounge. It's quite large. I was only there for a short period of time, so I only had time to go. I did find a nice place to sit down and with a couch, and then suddenly like three other dudes decided to like take space right around me and kind of take over the space, which is kind of not fun. But anyway, but it was well decorated. I wish I had gone up to the second floor. Apparently, that's where if you want a little bit more solitude, you can find it. They do have QR codes all over the place where you just scan them and order stuff if you want, as well as a buffet. I happened to order a roast beef sandwich. I probably should have ordered a Sapphire Burger because the roast beef sandwich wasn't that great. And there's a central bar, and there's not really much else to say other than that. The decor was great. Seems like a very convenient location. It's kind of in between two piers of, I forget which terminal is at the LaGuardia, but whatever the American Airlines flies out of.
So I know the Amex Lounge there, if I recall correctly, is Airside. Is the Chase Lounge Airside? Or no, the Amex Lounge is Landside.
Was Landside. I don't know if that's the same one. You have to realize, I think the Landside Amex Lounge you're talking about, it may be one location before where we are now. I don't frequent LaGuardia enough because this is the new terminal. So, you know, you've got.
So everything's Amex Airside Lounge. Then?
It's all Airside. It's not Landside.
Oh, that's wonderful.
At all.
Yep, I just remember everybody talking about this. Hey, this great new Amex lounge at LaGuardia. Like, I mean, granted, that was five, seven years ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's so great. It's Landside.
I remember when it was Landside. And, you know, and the distance between the security and the piers, right, was really short, right? But now it's a whole new world, right? This new LaGuardia terminal. I mean, there's actually the head house, right, that's close to, obviously, the you know, where the arrivals and the baggage claim is and the check-in desk. And then you have this a hallway or this bridge, sorry, that goes over the runway or the tarmac
area.
Yeah, exactly. To where the gate area is. And actually it's near the head house is where the lounges are. So you have to basically go up this escalator over the sky bridge to the gate areas where a lot of the boarding is taking place.
That's crazy. LaGuardia has a sky bridge. New York is moving up.
It really is.
Seattle and Hong Kong.
Yeah, I, you know, it's funny. I definitely, you know, this is not the first LaGuardia flight that I've taken this year. And every time I've been to LaGuardia this year, it has impressed me because, you know, last time I was flying Delta. Now, mind you, Delta's not done their construction. So the amount of walking that you have to do, depending on where your flights are from, at least this last one, it was incredible the amount of walking that I had to get to the Sky Club in LaGuardia. But that Sky Club also very new, very modern, very beautiful. So yeah, so far every lounge I've been to this year in LaGuardia has been newly renovated, very beautiful, very nice, although crowded. All of them have been crowded.
Okay. I think that's our LaGuardia visit segment of the podcast.
Yes.
So you connected in Montreal. Now, I recall connecting in Toronto twice. Once was fairly frictionless, once was very frictionful. How was your experience arriving in from the US and trying to connect to a Qatar flight?
I mean, it wasn't too bad. I mean, I had plenty of time. Both layovers were relatively lengthy in Montreal. For transferring from American to Qatar in Montreal, I did actually have to enter Canada. There is a transit area and there is a transit process, but clearly it's designed for transiting to a cross-border flight on a pre-clearance U.S. pier of the terminal or intra-Canada flight. I think those are the two kind of scenarios where I think you don't need to re-clear, or I'm sorry, maybe not the Canada, but regardless, I needed to enter Canada through customs and would have had to pick up any checked baggage if I had any. But nope, I went to passport control, used one of their automated passport computers, kiosks, and went through security and basically re-entered the international side of Montreal Airport. And that's how I made it. But it was all in the same terminal, at least. It wasn't like I didn't have to catch a bus or get on a tram. I never actually saw the outside of Montreal, I guess. I was totally indoors, both directions.
Wow. And any lounges worth seeing or shorten that connection because there's just, you want to be in Montreal airport as little as you can?
I think there's really no reason to be in Montreal. There's no benefit to it. The main lounge that Qatar uses also happens to be the Priority Pass Lounge. Also very crowded during the evening when my flight was out there. I think it's like the Banque Nationale lounge or something. And it was very mediocre. I mean, it was reasonable enough. They had some food, they had Wi-Fi, you know, all the basics, but not all that pleasant, you know, a place to spend a lot of time. Yeah, so the lounge game in Montreal is surprisingly weak. There's also an Air France lounge that's Priority Pass, but I tried to get in there. And between, I guess, British Airways and Air France having two flights in the evening, it was pretty much oversubscribed the entire time, so they were not taking any Priority Pass guests at all. So, yeah, Montreal is strangely, you know, for a relatively major city with a lot of international connectivity, the international side of the terminal is not well equipped either from a lounge perspective or even from like kind of just a retail shopping, et cetera, kind of perspective. It's kind of small and not super interesting to spend a lot of time in.
Yeah, it surprises me quite honestly, because I don't know that I really think, and I don't want to offend any of our Canadian listeners, but like, I don't really think of Montreal as an international gateway that's that high up, for lack of a better way of saying it, maybe third tier or second tier, you know, international gateway, but they have a lot of connectivity. I think, don't they have, and I should have researched this, but I think they have Emirates. They obviously have Qatar. They've got plentiful connections to Europe. They are kind of one of those sleeper international hubs.
I mean, you think about the number of flights to Paris alone. I felt like there was at least four or something. You know, two on Air France, one probably on Air Canada. I'm trying to think what the other airline is. Was it one of the other carriers in Trans? I don't know, whatever it is. There's another carrier in Canada that flies out there. So it's, strangely enough, there's quite a bit of connectivity, especially to Europe. And of course, I think Qatar only flies to Montreal. I don't know if they fly to Toronto.
So, TK, I don't know if this is the main event, to be honest with you. I really don't know if the Qatar flight, the long-awaited two-year, three-year wait for Qatar Key Suites was the main event for you or was Cairo and Doha. But the next day in this trip is clearly boarding that Qatar Airways flight.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of the more welcome parts of it. I mean, I was actually kind of getting hungry at this point because I hadn't really had a decent meal yet in that lounge. So I was kind of like, you know what? Hopefully I'll get something nice on this Q Suites flight. You know, so this was a 777, I think a 300ER with the traditional Q Suite, the new product with the door. I actually thought it was a little bit more spacious than the 350. I know some people prefer the 350 Q Suites. I think the comment is obviously, you know, you get a little bit lower pressurization, better humidity, a quieter cabin. But for me, I enjoyed it. For whatever reason, I felt like the 777 was a little bit more spacious than what I remembered from the A350.
And you know what? I think the 777, and I'll do a little producing as you talk about the in-flight experience, but I think the 777-300ER might actually be wider.
That might be what it is. I think I just felt the width. You know, it's a wider person. You know, I think you notice those details a little bit more. But anyway, so I get on the Key Suites flight. By the way, heads and shoulders better service, strangely enough, on this trip than the one I took last year to Cape Town. Strangely enough, I don't know why. It's just all the legs, all the flight attendants, all the service, very, very good. But there was a big disappointment. I was looking forward to this dinner, and I got my third choice. I was in like the fifth row. I didn't even get my first or my second. I got my third choice on. I don't think that might be the first time that's ever happened.
No. Didn't we have that problem on the Turkish flight on the way home?
I got my second choice on the Turkish flight. It just didn't get my first choice.
Yeah, I was on my third choice.
I know. Okay, well, you might have been on your, I was on my second. But this time I got, well, you know, the problem was there was two good items. It looked like there was like a really nice like beef dish. And then the other one was a lobster thermidor with Canadian lobster. And then like the third item was Asian chicken thighs. And I'm like, I've already had chicken thighs twice this today between the Amex lounge and the Banco Nacional, you know, whatever chicken they had there. I was like, the last thing I wanted was more aviation chicken thighs. But that's what I got for dinner. So, oh well. That was probably the one not so fun part, but everything else was great.
So, just circling back, the 777 cabin is 231 inches wide, whereas the A350 cabin is 221 inches wide. And as we all know, 10 inches can make a difference in your shoulder room and stuff.
I think so. And you know, it's the same configuration, I would imagine, in terms of number of seats per row, right? It's still 1-2-1.
Yeah, I just wonder where they give you those extra 10 inches.
I don't know. That's interesting.
I mean, I know I've experienced with the Polaris seat between a 767, a 787, and a 777. The 777 clearly feels roomier than the other two.
Yep. I mean, for me, I think I would probably, if I had the option, I would probably pick the 777 over the A350, at least for Qatar currently, because for whatever reason, my long-haul segments just felt much more comfortable, much more luxurious, less cramped. I remember my first ever Q Suites flights on the A350, I think, either 900 or 1000, they were just very, very cramped, I thought, when I first tried it.
These first world problems that we just have to endure. So food, lackluster, service, much better. Any other comments on the Q Suites before we talk about your time in Doha?
Nothing else too remarkable, except I got excellent sleep. It was, I think, an 11 or 12 hour flight, and honestly, it was too short. I think I got a lot of sleep, and I barely had time to watch anything on the in-flight entertainment. It was a very, very quick flight from Canada to Qatar, and it's a pretty long flight, actually.
You can't beat it when you feel like you almost want to ask the pilot, hey, could we just swing down to Sri Lanka and back? So you've made it to Doha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you do your overnight in Doha the first or on the way out or on the way back?
On the way to Cairo, I had a one-day layover, so I did spend the day in Doha and was able to make use of the arrival lounge, which they do have an arrival lounge in Doha. And so I was able to check. I was only there for like maybe 10 minutes because I did a quick restroom break and, you know, loaded up on some Diet Cokes, and that's about it.
Well, and the important thing for everybody to notice or to know on the arrival lounge, there's not like showers, at least that I'm aware of, but they do have their own customs and immigration checkpoint.
I don't know about that. I don't think I went through a special customs or at least my experience wasn't going through a separate customs and immigration, although there was one for business class passengers.
Yeah. So the arrivals lounge I remember is you enter the arrivals lounge, you've got sodas and beverages on both sides and a little bit of snacks. And then pretty much you walk in at the, let's say the upper left. If you were to turn right, you've just got a line of the immigration officer desks.
I think we've got two different arrivals lounges in mind. The one I visited was actually after passport control and customs. This was landside. This is after you pass out of the controlled area in the landside side of the airport. There is an arrivals lounge for people who have, you know, access as a business class or a first class passenger. And this did have showers, you know. So if you happen to arrive in Doha and it's rather early to check in, you could potentially go in there for a few hours and kill some time, take a shower, refresh, have some breakfast, and then make your way into the city. If you happen to arrive, let's say, fairly early in the morning and it's probably before a normal hotel would allow you, you know, check in into your hotel room.
So you're saying that the landside arrivals lounge actually had, did they have plated service or buffet service or like,
it was
you
a
know,
buffet
hot service?
There was some hot soup and some cold sandwiches. And so it wasn't, and this was mid afternoon, by the way. I think I ended up arriving there about 4 p.m. is ultimately the time I think I probably entered that lounge.
No, so, that's interesting because the arrivals lounge I've always seen is effectively just soft drinks, coffee. There might have been a snack here or there. The bathroom wasn't even fully in the lounge. It was like on the other side of the check-in, outside the check-in. But it was your quickest way to get through customs.
I should say immigration.
I always say customs and immigration interchangeably, yeah. But the reality is it's immigration that you actually have to talk to a person. Usually customs, you either get scanned or you just walk through the green door.
Nope. This was after both the immigrations and customs process, fully landside. And again, I think it's just, they make it available for, I think, a couple of situations. Like if you just want to refresh after you've gotten off your flight and you've gotten through all the various formalities at the border, you know, you got a place to freshen up. And they did have, you know, light meal type stuff, definitely not as nice as, you know, what you'd find in an Al Morjan type lounge or Al Swafa, you know, but, you know, it was for an arrivals lounge. I think it was perfectly fine. I was the only one in the lounge, probably because of the time of the day. But considering it's probably very lightly used, it was relatively large and it clearly had bathrooms and showers. I didn't take one, but again, I was only there for a few minutes, but it was good to know that it's there. But, you know, after the lounge, I decided to make my way to the airport or the hotel that I booked for my layover. I decided to do the Park Hyatt in Doha, as one does. I was able to book a nice privé rate through, mutual friend of ours, Spencer. And it was just a one-night stay. Great thing, obviously, with the Hyatt privé stays is, you know, most Park Hyatts do participate and, you know, got a $100 property credit, which is nice. And the other nice thing about the Park Hyatt in particular, the reason why I picked it was the location. It's right downtown. And it is extremely accessible from the Doha Metro. So believe it or not, I took public transport to get there. And it was extraordinarily economical. And the amount of walking is very minimal, actually.
That's awesome. In all the times that I've been to Doha, I have not once considered mass transit. And I feel like I now really should. This is the second time I'm hearing about using the Doha public transit. Like there was another podcast, I can't remember which one it was, that was also talking about using it. And it was, they said the same exact thing as you. So I'm a fan now. I want to test it out.
Yeah. I mean, if you're staying at the Park Hyatt, I really think there's no need to get the reason to get a car, I guess, if you do have a lot of luggage, you know, I could see that being probably the one deciding factor. But, you know, even in your situation, you know, with your child and your wife, you know, in tow and all your stuff, it might actually be less hassle to do the Doha Metro because honestly, the distance between the entrance of the Park Hyatt and the Doha Metro stop is, it's got to be a couple hundred yards at most. You know, it's very short. And even in the hot weather, I could see, you know, you might get a little hot, but I mean, it's not an extensive walk at all.
It's not the walking that turns us off. It's the transitions between levels. You know, every time there's stairs, that means it's, you know, 2 to 5 minutes waiting for an elevator.
Yep. Yeah.
That's the only turnoff that we end up.
There were those.
We're much
there,
more
there were
hardy.
Quite a few of those. Yeah, there were quite a few of those. You know, you would have to probably hop into a couple of elevators, escalators, and moving walkways and such. So, but you know, again, I would do it again. And I
worth the adventure.
I think it makes the Park Hyatt a reasonable layover hotel if people are considering it. And actually, it's in a very fun little downtown area. That downtown area has great views of kind of the Corniche area. So good views from the hotel, lots of dining and retail kind of in that area, and not very far from both the Islamic Museum and the market. The one interesting thing is, of course, this trip was happening during Ramadan. So a lot of the restaurants, you know, I guess in a lot of the public eating and drinking, you're not supposed to do until after sunset. So that's one interesting thing.
Yeah, we had that experience. I took my father and my brother around the world for my father's 70th. And I remember distinctly in the Dubai Mall the Dubai Mall. We walked over to Shake Shack to grab food, as one does. And they actually had curtains inside to sort of prevent walkers by from seeing people eating, because they, you know, that's obviously a city that is frequented by a lot of Westerners that might not have the intestinal fortitude to fast during late hours.
Yep.
And so that was interesting. And in the lounge at the Grand Hyatt Dubai, they also had separators. So somebody randomly walking from their room by the lounge wouldn't accidentally see somebody eating. So there are different ways that different countries and cities seem to address it. But it definitely is a different experience. And if you're not expecting it, and if you're not familiar with it, it's probably a culture shock.
It is. It's something I hadn't really thought about. I think I in the back of my head knew that it was Ramadan was happening, but I probably didn't really understand it until it was kind of, you know, boots on the ground. And, you know, I just ran with it. And, you know, one of the fun parts is, you know, I was at the Park Hyatt. I had this hotel credit to use, and I actually used it on the iftar dining kind of buffet that they had that evening, because, you know, all the guests who were kind of breaking their fast, right, they had kind of a special meal for those guys. And I was able to participate in some live music and lots of Western and Middle Eastern food kind of on offer. So I stuffed my face after, you know, having some subpar food the previous day and even on the airplane.
I have to ask, did it feel awkward being, I'll say, a Westerner? Like, how did the other folks treat you? Like, did they treat you any differently, or did you just, you were just,
well, first
just
of all,
another person?
I was at the Park Hyatt, it's not exactly
that's
unfriendly
fair.
To the Western guest. Although, interestingly enough, I definitely was in the minority of those dining there. I think there were quite a few people who were either locals or they were following, you know, they were observing the fast and Ramadan. From what I could tell, they definitely were Arab speakers that were the majority of the patrons in the restaurant. That being said, the restaurant wasn't overly well attended. You know, it was pretty empty. But, you know, I had a good dining experience. I enjoyed everything they put out there. And
it just seems like a really interesting experience to do one time, you know, at least one time. So it's cool to hear that you've done that. I hope to do it sometime. When we had talked about doing it when we were in Middle East during Ramadan, it just felt awkward. And maybe that was my self-imposed awkwardness, which, you know, you knowing me, that's not uncommon.
I didn't feel awkward. And, you know, and you know, I think the fact that it was at a Western branded hotel probably, you know, made my comfort level a little bit higher. Like, come on, you know.
And not only that, but a luxury Western branded hotel.
A luxury Western brand hotel. Exactly. Yeah.
Like the ideal scenario.
Yeah. The odd part was just eating so late. You know, I essentially had that dinner about 10 p.m. and ended up just kind of grazing against the dinner. I didn't really have anything else to do that night. So I probably didn't leave that restaurant to close to midnight. So
you get two meals in one.
Essentially. Oh, I mean, I think that's their idea. I mean, they've compressed, you know, I think those observing the fast, you know, they kind of compressed their meals as well. So, you know, the next day I did walk around a little bit downtown. You know, the strange thing was it rained. It rained in Doha, strangely enough. The weather was otherwise great. I mean, the temperature was very comfortable, at least for me, and it was in the kind of the 60s and 70s. So
should have bought a lottery ticket. I mean, not that you could buy such a thing in Doha.
almost like, you know, it really is one of those, you know, how many days in the year do you see rain on the ground in Doha? It's probably not too common. And that put a little bit of a damper on, you know, wanting to get around and see a lot of stuff. I just kind of made it a relaxation day, knowing that the next day I would be quite out and about and around Cairo. So after that one night stay, you know, made my way back to Doha Airport. The fun part, obviously, is getting to use the first class check-in. You know, as many of you may or may not know, the intra-Middle East flights on Qatar premium class are categorized as first class. So when you're flying to Cairo or Dubai or Jeddah or, you know, pretty much any of the main short-haul routes from Doha, and you're flying in the premium cabin, you're actually flying first class, and you'll have access to the Al Sawafa Lounge, which is their first class lounge. which is very direct from the first class check-in at Doha Hamad Airport. So you get to go, got to use that, got to use, be the only one in the security line for the first class security area that they've got. And then, you know, pretty much directly into the lounge. And I managed to have a nice little steak dinner there before my flight.
I have to say that there has never been a security that I would say is a dream, but like that security is comparable to Lufthansa's first class terminal.
It's up there. Yeah. Well, at least in terms of the volume of people and, you know, the privacy and like the exclusivity.
And they're actually courteous and helpful. Like security people that aren't treating you like the bad
yelling
guy.
At you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like, I mean, they're treating you like a human being. It's pretty incredible if you ask me.
It's very odd.
I mean, I guess we have a low bar. So you got the Al Safwa. Did you grab a quick bite there before flying to Cairo?
Yep. Had a nice steak dinner before heading to Cairo. Older plane equipment. I was bused. That was the other interesting thing was it was a bus gate that the next flight was up, but I was actually doing boarding from the lounge. So we actually had one of their first class buses come and grab us. And this is a very interesting vehicle.
I didn't even know such a thing existed of boarding directly from Al Safwa.
It does. You take an elevator down and it's the same buses that probably would have met you at the actual, you know, bus gate in the terminal.
The individual seats?
Yeah. With the individual seats, they have like little cutouts to put your carry-on roller bag so that they don't roll around. And they have some place to not run into people.
They have the little area for your Falcon?
No area for my Falcon that I saw, but I would imagine the Falcons would just sit in one of the extra seats. I don't know. No, this is interesting. You know, it's a normal, you know, passenger bus, but it was probably configured for at most 10 people, you know, who are premium passengers. And in fact, on the way back from Cairo, we had the same buses. We had two buses come to ferry the entire business class / first class cabin back to the airport. So, you know, they clearly needed more than one for all the passengers in first class.
Incredible. I just love those buses. I mean, I think Emirates does something similar.
Yes. They're a bit over the top is what they are.
Yeah. And they had a similar, I don't know if it's the same exact bus, but they had even similar buses back before they had Al Hamad Airport, or I don't think it's Al Hamad. I think it's Hamad International.
Hamad International. Yeah. I don't know airport. What it was before.
The old Doha Airport, they even, I mean, but everything was a bus gate.
Yeah.
And I thought that was good when I was there 12, 13 years ago. But those buses are fairly unique. And did they bring you directly to the Al Safwa lounge or did you have to go through security and stuff?
No, they took us to, on the way back, they brought us to the main kind of transfer area. So I ended up going straight to the transfer desk and kind of trying to see if I could get a hotel for on the way back, you know, because they do have, you know, if you have an 8-hour or more layover, you may qualify for a hotel being provided by Qatar Airways. But unfortunately, in this case, I was on the earlier of two Cairo flights. So technically, I could have had a little shorter layover. So I was disqualified.
Yeah, I think we've had that one too, unfortunately. Yeah. But I mean, you want to get out at a particular time out of Cairo. I don't blame you.
Yes.
So tell us about your time in Cairo. I mean, you went through all of this effort to go to Cairo for your first time. What did you see? Where did you stay? What would you go back for? And what really wowed you about Cairo, if anything?
Yeah. So, you know, again, first time Egypt, first time Cairo. Didn't have immense expectations, but, you know, I was excited to go see some of the Egyptian ruins and, you know, the pyramids and all some of these ancient wonders of the world. Stayed at the Cairo Hyatt Regency West, which is apparently the only Hyatt at this time in the whole Cairo area. So if as a Hyatt loyalist, this is going to be your only option. Not the best location. It is closer to Giza and some of the pyramids than some of the central downtown type of hotels, but it's still not that close. It's still about 20 minutes away from where the pyramids are. So this is kind of in a newer developing area that's still under construction. In fact, the Andaz is right across the street from the Hyatt Regency. Apparently, the Hyatt Regency, though, is very highly rated. I mean, apparently I was just looking at a Slack post on Milanomics saying, you know, here are the top 30 TripAdvisor rated Hyatts on Reddit, and the Hyatt Regency Cairo West is on that top 30 list, strangely enough. So is the Park Hyatt Doha is apparently as well. Part of it, I think, is just they've got a very good team that is fishing for good reviews. There was a lady walking around the buffet area in the morning at breakfast saying, oh, hey, are you having a good stay? You know, hey, can I get your email address so I can send you a survey? They clearly are worried about or concerned about, and this is probably a good thing, their online scores for ratings.
I find that to be very common in the Middle East. When we were in Doha ourselves back in October, the LXR was really, really big about that. The reason I think they do it is because they're more known by locals, but they're not as well known by Westerners.
Yeah.
At least that's what the LXR in Doha told me. They said, we've got locals that come here and they know us, but anybody outside of the local area, not even just the country of Qatar, but even just outside of Doha, they just didn't know that this hotel existed and they wanted to get the word out. Maybe Hyatt being the only one that's there, maybe they need to get that word out.
And, you know, it's a relatively new hotel too. So, I mean, I think they also suffer from the fact that they've got to make a name for themselves. So, and that Hyatt was pretty good. I mean, you know, they proactively upgraded me. I did not have to use a suite upgrade in order to get a suite. They had a reasonably nice lounge. I had essentially my dinner in the lounge there. And the lounge attendant was extremely, and I pretty much had the lounge to myself whenever I wanted to go there. There was maybe one other person there when I was there for lunch and maybe one other person there for in the kind of the evening time. One of the things I did have was they had some pizza, which normally I wouldn't go for, but the pizza was actually very good that they had in this lounge. So another point of interest for those who plan on visiting this particular location.
So I want to do something a little bit different. I want to take a step back to your experience arriving into Cairo and then jump right to your tour, partially because I think you had the same provider
that provided
both. And I think what you did, we've done the same thing. I have found that to be money very well spent.
I think it is.
You used your tour guide person as a connection for an expediter to get you into the country, essentially.
Yeah. You know, somebody meets you basically not far from where the gate is for your plane, basically before all the immigration and customs formalities for the border. This guy had a sign. He met me. We kind of raced over to where I could get the visa on arrival. I unfortunately was dilly-dallying and I didn't get the e-visa in time for Egypt. The kind of cutoff date is a couple of days in advance, and I was just procrastinating and apparently procrastinated a little bit too much. So it definitely made it worthwhile. I paid my $25, got my visa sticker right away. We ran, we sprinted to the area where the expediters are able to kind of get you in front of a passport control agent real fast. So then we sprinted through the baggage claim because I only had my check bags, and we sprinted to the person doing checks at the nothing to declare part of customs. I was off the plane and at the curb waiting for my driver and car. Must have been 15 minutes at most. And that includes a stop at the bathroom. So very fast. And I don't think it would have been anywhere close to that had I gone through the normal channels.
And it's crazy. I mean, Egypt, Israel, there's a handful of countries that I just won't enter without having that expediter service now. I don't know if that's lifestyle inflation or just being a good traveler, but I mean, it makes such a difference. Not only that, but as you get into some parts of that airport, there are touts, they're doing cash grabs and all this other stuff. If you coordinate it ahead of time, it is a much better experience.
I think it's worth the money because Egypt is very much a transactional country and there are people who have their hand out at literally every corner. In some cases, Egypt is very much still somewhat of a third world country, you know, and it definitely feels that way kind of in the chaos of the traffic, the way people drive. And you're going to see that also at all the touristy locations. You're going to have plenty of people approaching you, you know, either to sell you something or looking handout for, you know, taking a picture of yours or doing something. So there's a lot of that. And you just have to be prepared for that because that's going to be what kind of comes with the territory, in, especially in the Cairo area.
Yeah. And where you can remove friction is always a win. So tell us about your tour guide. Did you have them for 2 full days?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. I originally engaged them and I kind of in the back of my head, you know, this is a weekend. I kind of wanted to relax a little bit. So I figured I'd do one really big full day, a big day of touring, right? And then I'd kind of leave a second day just to kind of relax. Let's just say, you know, after I met the tour guide, I've got a little bit more comfortable, got a little bit more understanding of what we were planning on doing. I was quickly convinced to make that a 2-day trip instead of a 1-day trip. So I ended up, you know, instead of having kind of somewhere around, I think about $160 is what I had negotiated with the tour guide for some of this expediter service, transportation back and forth from the hotel to the airport, and a day of tour guiding and a driver is what was provided. I ended up paying about $100 more for it, making it a 2-day affair. And I think it was the right choice because I got to see a whole lot. I did have the expediter service on the way there. I didn't have anything on the way back. And I did have, you know, maybe a little bit less of a luxurious experience returning when I was in the Cairo airport on the way back. But, you know, some of that I think you're just going to have. And part of it also was kind of a timing thing because my tour ended just around maybe 3 p.m. or so. And that's kind of when I was dropped off at the airport. And it was probably about an hour before the Qatar Airways check-in area opened. So there was a little time where I was just sitting in a cafe eating a horrible sandwich because, of course, this being Ramadan, I actually did not have any lunch. I only had breakfast at the hotel at both times. I kind of fasted myself. So I joined in the observation a little bit, although I kind of cheated because I think the people who actually observe Ramadan were supposed to have their meal before 4 a.m., before, I guess, sunrise or so. My breakfast ended up being relatively short between the time that my driver picked me up to go on our tour. Yeah, I think it worked out. And it was nice just to have just nonstop, you know, touring for the majority of the day and then get dropped off in time to still, you know, grab some food at the hotel and take a dip in the pool, which was heated, but I was freezing drying off from coming out of the pool. But also, you know, had a great time, you know, seeing the pyramids, seeing a number of different antiquities, you know, getting to the Egyptian Museum, being able to see a number of different mosques and churches, and basically getting a really good slice of what there is to see. And in Cairo, I felt like I really did see a lot of what there is to be seen there. And the weather was wonderful. You know, it was not at all hot. I could definitely see we were in a place called Saqqarna, where there is a tomb that you descend into through a vertical horizontal kind of shaft. That's very, very claustrophobic. And I get some claustrophobic tendencies at times. And you really do have to duck down. I'm not a tall person at all. And I had to very much duck down to be able to get through this passageway. And I could see myself, had this been the typical Cairo summer with, you know, 100 degree temperatures, I don't know if I would have made it, because this would have been a very, very bad situation where, you know, with the temperatures being much more mild, you know, in the 60s and 70s, I was able to make it and was not too worse for wear to be able to see the inside and see all these hieroglyphics from, you know, this, you know, 4,000 plus year old, you know, tomb. And so that was a very, I think, enriching experience.
You're a better man than I. So we saw Saqqara, Sakara.
I think we're talking about the same place. My pronunciation may be off, but yes.
Yeah, we tried to descend, and both my wife and I were just not very comfortable with it. I
believe you. I mean, at first I was like, how long is this shaft going to go?
We were just not. We weren't there. We tried. We said, you know what? Maybe this isn't for us. I think if I were to go back after my daughter's a little bit older, I think I'd probably just grin and bear it. But for us, I mean, we were happy to see it. We also tried to get in over at the Grand Pyramid, and there were a couple of areas where I think you could walk in, and we sort of walked in a little bit, but it didn't feel like it was the, shall we say, the most, and maybe it wasn't the Grand Pyramids, maybe it was another pyramid on the way between Saqqara and the Great Pyramids, you know, the three.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But wherever it was that we stopped, I mean, like, the security guard just happened to be like randomly walking around with his AK-47 holding, not the butt, with his hand, he was holding the other end, just walking around like it was just a club. And our tour guide's like, oh, yeah, you can go in here. And I'm like, this does not look established to me. Like, there is no lighting. It's like, okay, you're using your phone as your flashlight. I don't think this is for me.
Yeah.
And so we didn't get that inside experience. We saw the hieroglyphics and stuff that was, you know, accessible without kind of delving too deep. But it sounds like you got a really great experience.
I think I did. I was very happy with everything I saw. And again, you know, I got a good referral also again from Spencer. You know, he talked highly of this person. I think, you know, some of those personal references are very helpful because, you know, you just have a much more higher level of comfort, you know, with the people. Hopefully they'll be trustworthy because, you know, obviously somebody lived through the experience. So, you know, at least that's one data point.
And this is Spencer Howard, straight to the points.
Yes.
Same guy who's sending out those amazing flight deals. He is a Privé agent. He does other hotel programs that I can't even, I'm not assuming
anything like Virtuoso, like maybe like a Four Seasons or, you know, anything, any of those kind of high-end hotels, I'm sure he could help you with.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's really built a nice niche for himself. And I know I've gotten recommendations from him as well. So, and I believe he's a member of the community. I mean, obviously he's a member of the Milan Point community, but I think he's a member of the Milanomics community as well.
Oh, wonderful. Well, hopefully he hears it. And thank you, Spencer, for the recommendation and for helping me out and making this trip happen. Other than that, you know, I would definitely come back to Egypt. You know, I think one of the things are, you spend a fair amount of time in traffic being shuttled around Egypt and in Cairo in particular. And, you know, we get some conversation and, you know, I think he clearly has had a number of people cancel on him, especially with the current situation, you know, in Gaza and other places where people being very nervous. And I didn't feel unsafe, although if I felt unsafe, it was probably more due to the traffic situation and people not following pretty much any traffic rules in the Wild West that they would call rush hour in Cairo.
And that's one reason why we chose not to tour the last time we went back, because of that traffic. I mean, you want to talk about bad traffic. I mean, I almost feel more safe in Bangkok.
Yeah, but that being said, I mean, it's not like, you know, you don't experience very similar traffic probably in like Vietnam or India or you know, any number of other places where probably have very similar types of situations.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
The traffic in Cairo is nothing to shy at. Yeah.
I think we joked that I don't think Tesla Auto Drive is coming to Cairo anytime soon.
I don't think Tesla Auto Drive could deal with the road the road conditions.
What road? I mean, there's
right, lack of road. Right.
Anyway, yeah, no, but again, very, very enriching experience. I am so glad that I went, and for whatever reason, I'm definitely much more excited now having come back than for whatever reason of going there. I guess I could get out of my rut. I don't know why I don't get excited for trips lately. It's kind of funny.
We got to figure out a way to change that one. Yeah, we got a couple of trips coming up, in fact.
Some that we have to plan for.
Many that, well, I don't think I have a round trip for either of our two trips.
Like, I don't think I do either. It's actually, we might be up to three trips, actually. But, you know, I think we got two domestic trips, I think, that are in the cards, right?
Oh, I'm trying to think of the second domestic trip. We got the Award Travel 101 Award Travel Group and then in Minneapolis. San Antonio. Yes, Minneapolis. That is true. In fact, I actually set a reminder to book that tonight. Not looking good, given how late it is that we're recording. So, Tom, I'm glad you finally made it there. I have to ask, now that you've been there, now that you've experienced the airport, which, mind you, is a whole lot better than way back when we used to do our mileage runs. When we did our 90-minute turn, it was the old airport. And my gosh, this one is just so much better. Would you do, if those cheap Cairo fares came back, would you see yourself doing nested itineraries and that sort of thing?
I'm not sure about nested itineraries. I don't know if I want to go to Cairo back to back. That might be a little hard.
Well, I mean, the way that but we've I could, done it,
for, how about this? I could be convinced if the fare was right. How about that?
The way that I've wanted to try to craft these nested itineraries, and Cairo is not the ideal scenario because it's 2 to 3 hours from a lot of the places that you want to be. But I've wanted to try to find these nested itineraries where you can go back and forth to a city, and then maybe the next time, if there's a Casablanca back to the US, then you just have to do a 3-hour flight to Casablanca, and then boom, you got Casablanca round trip, and then from Casablanca, maybe you do another Casablanca, but you're in Casablanca, and you fly down to Marrakesh to see that, or up to Rabat. I mean, Casablanca is an interesting one, if you can get that, because you could even hop up to Spain or Portugal and do that. But I don't know. In my head, that's almost the ideal goal, because if you can find a $1,000 airfare, $1,000, $1,200 airfare, you're going to spend less money. And if you paid for it with American Express Business Platinum card and paid with points, you would spend significantly fewer points for the round trip business, and you'd be earning points at the same time.
Yep. And actually, the comment I would make is I did actually earn quite a bit of, I think, nearly 50,000 Alaska miles from this trip. So that doesn't suck.
No, you can't beat that.
And at least nearly, I think, 20,000 elite qualifying miles about as well. So, you know, pretty good return on sub $3,000 business class fare. And the other funny thing was the speed of posting was kind of incredible. Within about an hour of landing in Montreal and ending this trip, my Alaska account was credited, and correctly by my calculation.
That's awesome. So, quick yes or no before we close it out. Does it make sense to buy a cheaper flight out of Canada and do that connection round trip, or is it too much pain for the savings?
It's a tough one. It's, you know, obviously, my experience is going to be different than a lot of other people's, but hearing some of your horror stories about your Toronto connection made me a little worried about it. But I can tell you my transfer experience, pretty easy, pretty frictionless. And part of the reason why I picked some of the flights that I did was, you know, they weren't super expensive either. You know, I was able to buy, I had vouchers for both United and American, which I did American on the way out and United on the way back. Interestingly enough, my United voucher was good for a Canadian Air Canada route, which is kind of interesting. And similarly, I think I was able to book an Alaska flight using my American voucher. But okay, so anyway, some interesting thing there. But yeah, I definitely think that I would consider doing another Montreal repositioning flight/itinerary again.
and you're convincing me to give Montreal a try. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you've enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.